This is Tommy Sheridan on Tommy Talks.
Welcome to this episode of Tommy Talks, the show that tries to explore the issues which the mainstream media often and very deliberately either ignore or distort. In this morning's episode, we have a guest who has been in the eye of the storm as far as the various inquiries, criminal cases regarding the former First Minister of Scotland, Alex Salmond, is concerned. A man who has been a fantastic advocate for the cause of independence, a man who has been on just about every march that I can recall, certainly since 2014, marching through the wind and the rain, speaking on platforms, often rain-soaked, but always with confidence and conviction for the cause of independence. And now we have this man who has been in the High Court of Scotland himself, facing a charge of contempt of court. The man, of course, is Craig Murray, historian, former ambassador, human rights activist, and passionate advocate for the cause of Scottish independence. Craig has written affidavit that is, for those of you uninitiated, a legal document, a document which Craig swears to be true. And this was an affidavit that he hoped to speak to in the High Court, but unfortunately wasn't asked to, even though he offered. But he's put it on his blog. He's put it on the Craig Murray blog, and I would encourage everyone who is interested at all in the ongoing investigations and the allegations of conspiracy against Alex Salmond to go onto that blog and read this affidavit. It's actually two affidavits. Craig, I'm very pleased to welcome you today, and I have to say I found the affidavit very informative, very, very demonstrable that you have been at the heart of this whole issue for a long, long time. And rather than you deliberately give out information which you shouldn't be giving out because of the law, you've actually withheld information, and you make that point in this affidavit that you could very well have given out information and committed contempt of court, but you were very careful not to. Is there anything else in relation to what you've said here that you want to say, or are there points in the affidavit that you would like to elucidate on?
Yes, I think the first thing to say is that, you know, I held on to this information for an awful long time because I was given most of it in confidence and wasn't able to publish it. It was very difficult. It was very hard to be aware. You know, to know that an innocent man is up on charges and those charges have been brought against that innocent man by a conspiracy to fit him up and not be able to say that is extremely difficult. And then to know that the conspiracy to fit him up is a conspiracy of the most powerful people in Scotland, that's quite astonishing. And then on top of that, that the conspiracy to fit him up was by senior people in the SNP, including the leadership of the SNP, is just breathtaking. If I hadn't had definite proof of it going along, and several instances of definite proof as I pinned down the story, all of which is detailed in my affidavit, I would have found it hard to believe. You know, it was quite astonishing that a party tries to wrongfully convict its former leader and send him to prison for the rest of his life, because that's what it would have been. If he was found guilty of attempted rape, he could have got 15 years, and he's not a young man. And you know, being in jail doesn't lengthen your lifespan. So the scale of this and the horror of this is breathtaking. It's really, really scary. I suppose the one thing I want to emphasise is that the conspiracy was by the most senior people. I have no doubt it involved the First Minister. It involved those very close to her. And many of those very, very close to her were the people put up to make false allegations. And I think that it's very important people realise that. We had one of the people who made false allegations appear on the BBC last weekend. and the BBC really didn't challenge her over the fact that what she had claimed in court was proven to be false by third-party eyewitnesses, not just by the word of that. It wasn't he said, she said. You know, there were third-party eyewitnesses who disproved these allegations. One thing she was saying, which sounds convincing, is, oh, well, there's no way that nine women would get together in a conspiracy to frame someone. That sounds convincing until you know who they are. And then you understand very well that these nine women, very connected, very politically active, influential, could do exactly that and did do exactly that.
Craig, what struck me reading the affidavit, and again, I would encourage anyone who hasn't yet read the submission to do so, if you are remotely interested in the other side of the story, because people dismiss the idea of salmon conspiracy, they dismiss the idea that he was fitted up, please go and read these affidavits. What struck me, Craig, is you are someone who was employed as a diplomat. You are someone who have been involved at the highest level of governments. You, at great risk to yourself, chose to expose the collusion of a British government with a government that was involved in absolutely despicable human rights abuses. So I think you have a skill set in relation to trying to sort out the wheat from the chaff. You have a skill set about determining whether what you've been told is true or not. Would it be fair to say that although you were sceptical about some of the things that you were hearing, you didn't just accept them, you tried to have these things verified?
That's very true. And you know, none of it comes from a single source. It's from a variety of sources which corroborated each other. And using techniques I was taught in the Foreign Office, when I was told something, I did checks on, firstly, whether that person genuinely had direct access personally to this information. You know, was it just someone retailing gossip, or was it someone who credibly had first-hand access to the actual information they were claiming to have? Then, of course, other things about their motive, why they were telling me. I went through a number of such checks in exactly the same way that we're taught within the Foreign Office to analyse intelligence sources. But the evidence built up, and it was all very consistent. And what's more, I was told things, and then a few months later, those things happened, if you see what I mean. But there were bits of a jigsaw I was told in advance, which verifiably fell into place as time went on. So it was quite a careful piece of investigative work, a piece of investigative journalism. And I was testing it all the more because I genuinely did not want this to be true. You know, my hope was that this would all turn out to be nonsense, but in fact, you know, very plainly wasn't nonsense at all.
I need to interrupt you there, Craig, because I think that is a key point, because some quarters within the independence movement, or more appropriately within the SNP, have chosen to launch attacks on people like you, myself, and others who have sought to, if not defend Alex Salmond, then at least make the point that the guy has been found innocent by a jury of peers, predominantly women, of very serious allegations. And he was also cleared in relation to an investigation by the government, which was proven and accepted by the government to be biased and illegal. So when you come to the aid of a man like that, some of us are accused of undermining the cause of independence. You are a member of the SNP. You stood, I believe, for the post of president for the SNP at the recent conference. You received a reasonable number of votes in relation to that particular election. You have got no axe to grind on behalf of the unionists. You are very much for Scottish independence, but you find yourself unable to stay quiet when an innocent man's life is put on the line.
Yeah, there are, you know, a few very important reasons for this. The first thing is that an independent Scotland is essential, and we need an independent Scotland now. We need it very quickly because the Tory government is a disaster for Scotland. But we need an independent government that's built on foundations of truth and decency and honesty, not on foundations of corruption. You know, we don't need that kind of bad start. And I think that's the first thing to say. I think suppressing the truth is never the way to go. The second thing to say is that one of the reasons that Nicola was out to get Alex was that Alex wanted to move forward quickly on independence, and Nicola doesn't want to move forward on quickly on independence. And you know, we're just coming to the end of a parliament which had a mandate for a second independence referendum, which mandate they did not use. We're being told that if we vote SNP again in May, then honestly, they will use the mandate this time, unlike all the other mandates they've squandered. I mean, from my point of view, the people who are accusing me and others, including yourself, who have tried to get the truth of this, of being anti-independence, are people who are themselves at best gradualists, who are in no hurry to achieve independence whatsoever. And to find a situation where Alex Salmond and Stuart Campbell and Robin McAlpine and yourself and myself and all the people who've been campaigning for independence for years are being accused of being secret unionists by people who in many cases are pretty newcomers to the independence movement, and in very many cases, if you look down through their Twitter feeds, for example, show much more interest in other matters, particularly identity politics, than they show in actual independence. You know, it's a nonsense. It's an absolute nonsense. What has happened is an insult to the real independence supporters, to the people who have been campaigning for years and years and years, who in many cases have devoted their entire lives to the cause of independence. And the attempt to smear this as a unionist plot, you know, it's a squirrel or a magpie turned into the conversation.
I find it pathetic, Craig, and I've likened the whole situation to us being involved in an industrial struggle. I've made an analogy of our struggle for independence to an industrial struggle, and one of our members is sacked. One of the members of our struggle is left on the battlefield injured. What do you do? Do you just decide, oh well, forget that member, let's just keep going and ignore the pain and suffering that comrade is going through? Or do you decide that as part of the struggle, you don't abandon the struggle to help your comrade, you consider it part of the struggle? And that's why I look at the Alex Salmond situation and I say, the guy has been wronged. We believe those wrongs should be sorted, the truth should come out, but that we are more committed than ever to independence. This isn't about a deflection from independence, this is about driving independence forward with even more determination.
I think that's very true. The truth is, you know, once independent, we can move the country forward and visit the fundamental reforms that are needed. But one thing this has shown me, which is something I think I knew intellectually, but it's made me really feel it, is once we have independence, Scotland as a nation needs radical reform. This whole episode, they've revealed deep corruption in the Crown Office. They've revealed deep corruption in Police Scotland. They've shown that the existing political establishment cannot be allowed to continue to rule an independent Scotland. We need not only to achieve independence, we need, once independent, we need a radical social change and reform to make Scotland a much more equal society.
Craig, I think you're touching on there the dichotomy that faces all national liberation movements throughout history, because there are always those who want change for change's sake, maybe to get a bigger slice of a pie that they can't get their hands on right away, and others who want change as a means to even more radical progression. I'm often think of Mr. James Connolly reminding everyone after securing Ireland's freedom that they should hold on to their guns because they had a lot of work to do in relation to the Irish landowners and business owners who were not interested in the liberation of the working class. And from our point of view, the independence movement is big and broad, isn't it? But there are many of us who don't want independence just to change the flag that flies above our municipal buildings. We want independence to change the level of pensions, to change the minimum wage, to change land ownership, to change the idea that our oil should be owned by Texan billionaires. Those are the things that matter to those who believe in radical independence.
That's very true. And I think here again, you do come up against that, what's called the gradualist fundamentalist split where those people who are actually quite happy with society as it is, who by and large, you know, doing quite well in middle-class jobs and profiting, in effect, from the current economic dispensation, by and large, they're not in too much of a hurry to achieve independence. So, you know, they might quite like to get there one day. Theoretically, they'd like to get there as long as it in no way risks their income or their employment and doesn't change much. Whereas the more radical elements in which I would include ourselves, we are very anxious for Scottish independence to happen tomorrow so we can start building a new society and making the fundamental reforms that make this a country worth living in.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, but it reminds me a bit of the official Yes campaign at the start in 2014, which I used to interpret as, listen, vote for independence, but don't worry, nothing will change. And I didn't think that was a particularly attractive message, which is why Hope Over Fear was launched and why a lot of local Yes groups began to become more radical and divergent from the official message that was coming out. In this last couple of minutes, Craig, you are in a position where you're waiting for a judgment. Can you tell our listeners that regardless of the judgment, that you have no regrets about your actions?
Oh, no, not at all. I only sometimes wonder whether I should have been more radical and published more. I mean, I did try very hard to stay within the bounds of the contempt of court law, for example. I wonder whether that limited too much people's right to freedom of information, to people's right to know under the Article 10 of the Human Rights Act. I'm very happy with what I've done, whatever happens to me. And for me, it's a part of the struggle for justice and truth, which goes on. And I'm going to carry on with it irrespective of what happens in my immediate future. And I shall be campaigning still harder for very early independence.
Can I just make the point and perhaps alert the ruling authorities to the fact that if you were, I don't think you will be, but if you were convicted of contempt of court and sent to prison, you would be a different category of prisoner. You'd be a civil prisoner. You would be put in a criminal jail because we don't have civil prisons. But you would have extra rights, and some of those rights could be deployed in this next few weeks, because you would have the right to call a press conference, you would have the right to stand for election, and you would have the right to run an election from a prison cell. And the reason I know all that is because I did it in 1992, and I was elected to the Glasgow Parliament from a prison cell after being convicted of contempt of court. So I want to issue that as a bit of a warning, Craig. If the ruling judges are listening, if they want to create a martyr in the shape of Craig Murray, then they had better beware what they do, because there's an election coming over the hill in May. And if you are put in a position where your liberty is taken from you, it won't be for long, because if you ever leave that place, you'll be leaving as an elected politician. I've got no doubt about that.
Thank you, Tommy. That's a cheerful thought and almost makes me happy with the idea of fighting the election from custody. That sounds quite fun.
Craig Murray, it's been a pleasure to have you on Tommy Talks. For now, thanks very much, and I wish you all the best. I don't want you having your liberty taken from you. I want you being able to campaign from your laptop for independence in the May elections. Thanks very much, Craig Murray.